Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this bi-week edition of Gopher Gridiron Radio, where we get to be luckily joined by, on even a bi-week here, my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. And Luke, this is a mailbag edition, one that we asked for questions on Twitter.
We got a lot of questions
to get through from Twitter and Gopher Illustrated. So we got a lot to get into tonight. But before we do that, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, again, the Goal Line Club is sponsoring the 2019 season. You can check out all of the events, et cetera, that they have going on at goalineclub.org. I would encourage you all to maybe think about checking out the game preview coming up. I did get a text this evening that Bobby Bell will be in attendance, which we mentioned earlier before, and also Kenny Burns will be the coach. So if you're interested in hearing from any of those gentlemen, I encourage you to sign up. Also, seriously, signups are going to almost assuredly sell out. So they're really high on that. So for this Penn State game, Bell 5 is going to save you $5 if you're not a member. Totally check that out. So goalineclub.org. All right, let's get into kind of some of this mailbag stuff. We probably better lay some ground rules here because we had so many questions. We're honestly not going to be able to get to all of them. So one thing we want to say is thank you for submitting questions. I know that Ryan asked on GI, Derek asked on Twitter, etc.
We have 70 questions in total between Gopher Illustrated people, between the Twitter people. We have a lot to get through. So know that there are some repeats. We've looked at some different things. Like we said, we're going to try to get to as many as we can. We're going to try to have Derek spew his elite football mind and try to learn something from him tonight. I know I'm excited for that. And then I'll do my best as well, Luke, in trying to just answer all these questions that we have. We thought about what to do on the bye week, and we thought that with an 8-0 Gopher team, a lot of maybe casual fans are listening to the podcast now, and they want to learn a little bit more, so we're going to do our best.
All right. Yeah. And I think I'm assuming, Ryan, your job is GopherIllustrated.com. It is to cover recruiting. And I think probably to respect that, there are a number of recruiting questions. We'll probably avoid most recruiting questions because that is your bread and butter. And if people want to check that out, they can find that in Gopher Illustrated.
Right. And I just found out this week for you GI members out there, and you haven't been to GI this week, CBS All Access is now included in your membership free of charge. Commercial free CBS All Access. It's $100 value just for being a GI member. You get it for free. So, yeah, with the coaches on the road, it's a busy day on Friday, a little bit busy on Saturday. The names and everything will be on there on Gopher Illustrated. And they pay my bills and this podcast doesn't yet. So they get the premium info for the most part. We'll do over the top. It's just very high level recruiting stuff. But as Luke said, probably not going to get into the nitty gritty there. But I really want to start out with a question from my co-guy.
Do you want me to try to pronounce this name? Because I feel like...
Yeah, how do you pronounce Kyle's last name, Luke?
Well, there's really a lot of consonants, Kyle, here in your name. There's only two vowels, quite a number of consonants. And I'm going to go with... I've heard it numerous times, but I'm going to go with Goblerish.
Kyle Goblerish.
Goblerish?
Goblerish.
Oh, yeah. I really wasn't that close. But I'll go with Gobi. That's fine.
Gobi's fine, yeah. So Gobi, he wants to know from Derek. He wants to talk about blocking schemes. And he thinks the big guys up front need a little bit more love, Derek. He wants to know a couple things specifically. Three things. Now, you can tackle each as you would like. But number one, what worked on the left side of the offensive line against Maryland? What wrinkles have you seen from this offense in general since that first bye week? And what additional wrinkles do you think Minnesota is setting up for? But first of all, hello, Derek.
Hey, guys. Appreciate you having me back. And I'm excited. It's going to be fun. A little change of pace. And appreciate everybody's questions. Good questions here from Kyle. I love talking offensive line, and I'll try and keep the go in depth on some of the schemes, but keep in mind trying to keep people awake as well. Maybe so you guys will have to cut me off if it gets too long or too boring. So I think that the biggest change since the bye, without question, has been just the addition of outside zone, the frequency and you know, the success rate that they're running at. And we've talked a lot about the challenge that presents to the defense and forces them to defend sideline to sideline. But, you know, specifically, left side of the line, I think, has had a little bit more success, as he alluded to, against Maryland. I don't know, other than maybe just a little bit more success for the personnel, you know, on that side for that particular game. I don't know that there's much more beyond that. I would just say, It's been very intriguing to see them at times have more success running that to the boundary, and that's strictly a numbers game. So we talk a lot about running into an even box, a plus one box. Well, you can go even a step beyond and break that down, you know, for both sides of the ball. So Gophers are looking for numbers, and they've had a lot of success running that into the boundary, which you may not think because outside zone is a stretch play. You need more room, but if they're defending with lighter numbers to the boundary, that's where I think the Gophers have had some success. So that's another wrinkle that they've put in, you know, as part of outside zone that's worked well for them. Another thing that I would say is they're utilizing the tight ends differently as the year goes on, or just, I guess, in more variations. Rather than, you know, blocking a defender, the edge defender, the defensive end or outside linebacker, on the strong side, they're now often using those tight ends on, you know, Ryan, you and I talked about it. It's not exactly a wham block, but it's a back block where they're coming back and blocking the end man on the weak side of the line of scrimmage. So back from where the ball is being handed off.
So if they were going zone left and the entire offensive line's going on the left side, Rodney's going to the left side, but your tight end, who is lined up on the left side, is coming across the formation to get that backside. Am I describing that accurately?
Yep, exactly. And so in order to be able to do that, you have to have tight ends that are comfortable and proficient blocking in space. It's like a pull block. You're running and you have to block an athletic defender, a defensive end, or an outside linebacker in a lot of space. So you have to be able to do that, I think. If I were to answer the question, well, why are they doing that more? It's probably because they've shown in practice that they're able to do that type of block and they're becoming more successful at it. And why would they do that from a scheme perspective is it freezes the linebackers in essence. So now they're not able to cheat and watch the tight end's block to read him and know where the ball is going. He's going, as you put it out, the opposite way of the flow. So that's another wrinkle they've added. And, just to answer the third and last part of this, what might be coming up, in the future, I definitely see the opportunity to run a lot more play action. I'm not talking RPO. They've run that and run that very well, but talking, you know, just straight up play action. And so one example of that would be using that back block we talked about. A very common route off that is to take that back block, make it look like it's, let's just say, outside zone to the right. The tight end comes back and a back block to the left. It actually fakes that block and then leaks out the backside into the flat. If they're man coverage, usually the person covering him goes to play the run and he ends up wide open on the backside. So I would, I know, Ryan, you get the question often about, you know, involving your tight ends in the passing game. That's one thing that I think that is there and to, for people to look for in these last four games.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it's something they could be setting up for. Like, if you remember back to the Nebraska game, folks remember Jake Paulson's wide open drop. Well, how did they set that up? Well, he'd been blocking and blocking and blocking, and then the linebackers are so concerned then about stopping the run, thinking, well, Minnesota doesn't use the tight end to begin with. That's how a tight end gets wide open by 30 yards. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if you see the play action game start to come back a little bit more to the tight ends. And by saying that, maybe two or three extra targets here in these final four games doesn't seem like a lot, but it could be a potential big play in a big spot game here in November, Luke.
Yeah, it is interesting to see, you know, the progression of an offense, et cetera. And it is fun to see them kind of set things up. I know you talked about this a little bit on the last podcast too, Derek. But that's a great question from Gobi. Ryan, I wanted to throw one at you. A number of people were asking about freshmen. A guy named Chris Doffing on Twitter. I know that I am looking at Michael Vinters on GI, also Gulf 33. So could you touch on some of the freshmen, one that are redshirting, also guys that have played, et cetera, and who some guys that might still yet play that haven't played yet, if you can kind of lead into any of these kind of true freshmen thus far?
Yeah. I know that some of the folks are wondering, well, who's going to redshirt and or who can still play? As we sit here, the names to really know. So Donald Willis has already played in four games, and that was the linebacker number 20 that you saw in special teams. He's like a heat-seeking missile out there, and Minnesota's not going to use him again. They want to make sure that they have the redshirt for him. They still have two games, though, of DJ Gordon, the true freshman from Miami, the linebacker that they beat out Miami and Florida State for at signing day last year. You also have the quarterback situation where Cole Kramer came in to kneel down at the end of the Maryland game after Jacob Clark got in his first game. Didn't quite understand that one, but Cole Kramer has two games remaining, and Jacob Clark has three. You've also seen Trey Potts come in the last 2 weeks. He's got 2 weeks left. And so you're looking at a lot of these names, and people are asking, well, who do you think can factor in the rotation? I know a place that a lot of folks are wondering is on the defensive line. And they saw guys like D'Angelo Griffin get into the game last week and make a tackle in garbage time. My thing with that is, whose snaps are you taking away from them? You're not going to take them away from Sam Renner or Keontae Shad. Both are playing well right now. And then I don't want to have a guy burn a redshirt potentially or really factor much into a rotation at nose tackle, where I think Du Treadway and Teague are playing pretty well. And then that leaves – there's just not a lot of playing time to go around on the defensive line right now. And so I know a lot of folks are wondering, well, how are the defensive line guys doing? Well, from what I've been told anyway, and I've spent a lot of the week kind of reconnecting with sources now that they're not worried about game planning for at least a week. Now, the coordinators are staying in from recruiting this week to focus on Penn State, and rightfully so. But I mean, I've gotten a lot of questions about guys like D.V. Harris, M.J. Anderson, Rashad Cheney, Logan Richter, D'Angelo Carter. I had a conversation with one of my sources who was on the road heading to the airport today, and he really likes especially the defensive line, and they're very, very excited that they don't have to burn a redshirt on the defensive line for the first time. And since PJ has been here and seemingly since I covered this team, they don't have to burn a redshirt on the defensive line, which I think is a very, very nice thing anyway. It's been too many years that you're back looking at it like, how nice would it have been if Steven Richardson would have had that fifth year, or, you know, different guys such as that. So Minnesota being able to redshirt them, especially with Carter and Tayon and Winston, Sam Renner all graduating, you're going to have to get some new bodies in there. But they need a year, especially on the line in the Big Ten. You need a year to put on weight, develop that weight, and make sure it's good weight. So in terms of guys like in the final four or five games here, I expect to really factor in. I mean, you're going to see DJ Gordon. I would be shocked if he's not on the kickoff unit for Penn State, considering the amplifications of that game, or ramifications, excuse me. But other guys like that, Luke, it's tough for me to say that they're really going to factor in much. You've already seen Tyler Newbin play seven games. Brady Weeks and Michael Lance, the long snapper and the kicker, they've already played in every single game as well. But I don't really anticipate many more red shirts being burned this year. Now, the interesting part would be, what do they do with Bryce Williams? He's played in three games already. He's got one more left, and I know that they really want to get the red shirt back on him. So that's where you do still have Cam Wiley at one game. Potts has two. That'll be an interesting thing to kind of keep an eye on down the stretch.
Yeah, very interesting. Good question. Derek, I wanted to get your thoughts. I thought this was a good question on Twitter, and I've been wondering the same. Chambers asked about what your thoughts are on O-line rotation. Just in general, you know, that's not something that you see very often. And I think the old adage is you want to get five guys to be able to gel and come together. And we all know that the Gophers have been effectively playing six here post the bye. So get your thoughts on, you know, just the idea of rotating guys on the offensive line in general.
I think that a couple things to mention here. I think that the six players that have been playing on the offensive line this year are very close. I know the question's come up a few times about who are the best five or what's the best combination. And I guess it's my opinion that that's not the goal of the coaches. I think what they're trying to do is develop all six players. I don't believe they have a senior in that rotation of six. So they're trying to develop guys. And I think that maybe there's also something to be said about keeping guys fresh, the way that, you know, defenses rotate defensive lines these days. There might be something to that, but I guess the example I would use is, earlier in the year, Curtis Dunlap was a guy that wasn't as far ahead as the rest of the line. Now they, in under a normal circumstance, conventional wisdom, maybe he gets pulled from the starting lineup and he sits for a few games while someone else plays. Well, the downside to that is you're not developing Curtis Dunlap, at least with game experience. And so we saw that after three or four games, all of a sudden he starts to come along because he's getting those reps. So I think it's paid off for him. And I think that that's, you know, one of the ideas behind the rotation. And then, of course, the other thing is, you know, they've been very fortunate with injuries this year, but, you know, having six guys is a benefit for that reason. You know, one of these guys goes down with an injury and now you have someone who's ready and someone who's played. So, you know, and the last thing I would say is something that maybe is a little bit unconventional. I'm not a big believer in needing a lot of games for guys to play together on the offensive line in order to gel or to get better. I think what people have to remember is these guys get hundreds of reps in practice, you know, so with all different, you know, players next to them. And so they've developed a lot of that familiarity in practice. And, you know, you have to play a couple games, you know, against different competition next to a guy, and I think you're good to go. So I think that's a little bit overrated in my book.
So do you think that's interesting for you to say that, because I guess I was a believer that it takes a few games for a new set of guys to kind of gel together. Do you think that it can go a lot quicker than maybe I believe if they just communicate up front, or what do you think the biggest thing there is?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few, you know, the blocking calls are usually one guy is making the block calls, and if there's combination calls, it's one person makes that call. And the type of block that's being done is not all that different depending on who you're comboing with, in other words. So it gets to, when you're coaching, you're always looking to build consistency among the guys that are on the team. So if they have a combo backside block and inside zone between the guard and the tackle, that coach is coaching those guys the same. They want that how they want that to look is the same no matter who's in there. So There are a few exceptions, I would say, that, you know, quote unquote, getting used to playing next to somebody, things like passing off twists in the passing game. That's a feel thing. Some guys like to zone those off. Other guys like to get on two different levels and stay man on that. And that's kind of a relationship thing. You play next to somebody, you get used to how they handle that. There's a couple things that are unique to who's playing next to you. But, I mean, overall, again, I just my experience has been that it's not as big as of a deal as I guess people make it out to be. That's what I've found.
Interesting. All right. I'm going to kick it back to some of the Gopher Illustrated questions. User UMMMD32. So I'm assuming a Minnesota doctor here. Any rumblings about the Fleck extension? This isn't earth-shattering, and it's nothing that we haven't shared on GI for weeks, but I would be surprised if something gets announced before the end of the season. I've kind of talked about my thought process and from what I've heard from sources and why I say that on Gopher Illustrated. What are the possibilities that Kamal Martin plays against Penn State? That's a great question. I know that Minnesota is trying to do everything they can this week on the bye week to get him as close to 100% for this game. There's a reason he didn't suit up and play last week. The thought process being you're 3 weeks removed since that injury come Penn State. And they're really hoping that injury is ready to go. And I think that there's a 50-50 chance. Now, I can't really give it much better than that right now, considering it's really tight-lipped around injuries, especially with Fleck. But we'll see where he's at in a week or so. Any interesting recruiting nuggets? Again, I can't really get into too much of that without the paying members of GI. Yasin Abdi, man, I'm sure I butchered that, wants to know, what is the ceiling if PJ stays at Minnesota? He talks about how we've seen Wisconsin and Iowa ceilings, but what do I think is Minnesota's? That's a great question, I think. Luke, do you have any thoughts on what Minnesota's ceiling could potentially be with Fleck?
That's a good question. I think a number of people probably know I'm a fairly big Washington Husky fan, in addition to a big Golden Gopher fan, thanks to my mom was a alum of there, and I will actually be at the Apple Cup this year. Woot. But I'll say this. I think, you know, there's an urban team that has all of the struggles, or not struggles, but all the competition that we hear about that we have here in Minnesota with pro sports teams, and they were able to make the college football playoff, right? I think that realistically, there's no reason to believe that the Gophers couldn't be a college football playoff team at some point. I think that, you know, they're going to have to get some sort of sustained momentum behind it and be able to build on recruiting classes, etc. And that's going to take, you know, obviously consistency with Fleck being around. I don't think you can jump from head coach, but I think that's a realistic. I really do think that's realistic, and that they can win Big Ten championships. I think that's totally realistic.
Wow. I didn't expect the optimism.
No, I'm dead serious.
Take another sip of that Kool-Aid, Luke. Is it maroon and gold?
I'm dead serious. I think it's possible.
Wow. Okay. I'll say this. I think the ceiling is pretty high. I don't know if I would say college football playoff level until you see Fleck starting to consistently finish with top 15 and top 20 classes. You'd be shocked to know the guy who deals in the recruiting industry is a firm believer of what they're doing with the stars and everything like that.
Okay, then let me flip that question around. Do you think they're capable of getting top 15 and 20 classes?
Yes.
I think that you and I are saying the same thing.
Well, it's more like I need to see it first. Like, I hear what you say, but I trust what you do.
I hear you, yeah.
That is the expectation internally, is to, especially with this 2021 class, where you have all this potentially sustained momentum. Like, yes, it's great for the short term, potentially, with maybe a couple of surprises here down the stretch. But what you can really do is then sell it to the 2021 class, who you have a full year to really get that message into their head. I also have a question here about, what do I think Minnesota can do to keep Rossi and Chirac after the season? And if I had to pick one, if one had to go, who would you pick to stay? For the record, I don't think Rossi and Chirac are going anywhere after this season. I really don't. I think Chirac likes it here. There's a reason he has stayed here the last couple of years. I don't know that I expect him here after the 2020 season potentially, but I do expect that he is here for the 2020 season. Joe Rossi, I don't think he's going anywhere as well. I think he likes it here. I think he's worked his way up from a analyst to a D-line coach, the LB coach, to now the defensive coordinator. Why put in all that hard work behind the scenes to only bolt after 1 year? So I think both stay around. I don't know that I would be shocked if all the position coaches were back for another year. But if I had to pick one to stay, I'm going to pick Shiraka. I think that Joe Harris-Simiak has a very bright future ahead of him. You have Jim Panagos there as well. But what Shiraka has been doing to this offense has been pretty crazy. But I want to throw one back over to Derek. Derek, the legend of MV, wants to lob a softball to you. He wants to know, what is the difference, or what is different about the current defensive line scheme compared to Killen Clay's D-lines to what Minnesota is doing now? And how are they contributing to the team defense that has been fairly good against the run, despite the lack of TFLs and other box score stats? So essentially, can you compare and contrast the Killen Clay's defensive scheme compared to what we've seen from Rossi this season? And how are they contributing, even though the box score stats aren't there?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the question from Matt. He and I go way back, and I always appreciate his insight. So real quickly, the Kill Clay's era defensive lines were, the philosophy was this: the defensive line ends, used a wide nine technique, so lined up very wide outside of the end man on the line of scrimmage. And their job essentially was twofold. It was to contain in the run. So the fact that they're lined up wide, they would get upfield and contain anything from going outside of the tackles. And then in the passing game was to simply to rush upfield against the passer. And so there's always a trade-off when you change a responsibility like that. And what the Kill Clay's scheme did was it used the safeties then to protect against the run inside of the defensive end. So if you're going to line up your defensive ends wide and funnel everything inside of the tackle, then you're going to open up gaps essentially right off tackle that you can't defend as well with a nose tackle or a three technique. And so you need to compensate by involving the safeties in run defense. Now, it's a very good scheme to lock down, to really contain things in the run game. What that does is it takes those safeties out of some things you want to do in pass defense. It also makes the defensive end in a pass rush very one-dimensional and in some cases easier to block. So what this current scheme involves is they don't use wide nine techniques very often. So what that means is those defensive ends are more heavily involved in run defense. So they're trying to close down those gaps in the tackle and not defend the run. Sometimes they're the contained player, sometimes they're not. So the fact that they're not wide nines, what the current scheme requires is many times a nickel or an outside linebacker becomes the contained player. So you've seen Chris Williamson, some of the guys on the outside play run, and that allows, again, those defensive ends like Carter Coughlin to play two different gaps, able to get him inside to play the run, but he can also rush the passer on the outside. So there are trade-offs, and the last one I would say as positive to the current scheme is when you do that, it frees up your safeties, namely Antoine Winfield. He's not always having to come up and play run defense off that tackle. And so he can roam. They can use him kind of as a robber technique where he can defend people in the middle of the field. He can come on a late blitz up the middle. It just allows you more flexibility. So that's kind of a difference in the schemes. To answer the question about, how they've been good in the run despite a lack of flashing stats, I would say they've been very conservative is not the right word, but very sound in their run fits. So it's a gap scheme that they're running on defense, and they've done, in my opinion, made a very conscious effort, even in some of the pass rushing situations, to stay in their lanes. So the defensive lineman, and Ryan, maybe when I'm finished, you can touch a little bit on the three technique and the nose tackle, because I know you've had some conversations close to the coaching staff about that. But What they're looking for out of the defensive line first in run defense is simply to defend the gap and take up blockers. And so that obviously gives flexibility for the linebackers and then those force defenders from the secondary to make tackles. So that might be a reason why they're not necessarily blowing up field, you know, getting tackles for a loss, trying to make plays in the backfield, because in order to do that, it's a little more risky. You risk undefending your gaps and giving up some of those bigger runs up the middle. So that would be, I think, perhaps why you're not seeing quite as many flashy stats. But again, it's very sound fundamentally.
Yeah, so from what I understand, and again, I don't pretend to be the biggest defensive line nerd in the world, but from the questions I've asked to the people close to the program is, you know, I essentially had to try and ask, can you dumb it down for me so I can understand it? And the way they pitched it to me was this. Minnesota's nose tackle is trying to eat a double team every single play. And that's why you look at Mikadu Treadway's stats and you're thinking to yourself, he's played 8 games. He has 9 total tackles. Wow, he's not doing anything. Well, that's part of the scheme that they're trying to do because they want to give their 3 technique as many one-on-one opportunities as they possibly can because they believe, and they being the Gopher coaching staff, that Sam Renner and Keontae Shad, if they're going to see one-on-one coverage with a guard for 70% of the game, well, they're probably going to win those matchups. And so that's where even the way it was put to me, if you see the 3 technique getting double teamed, something's going wrong up front for Minnesota because that's not what they want to happen one bit. That is not at all. They want to make sure that Renner and Shad have one-on-ones. They want to make sure that Coughlin or Devers, whoever it is outside as well, can continue to flourish out there as well. They've done some different things up front with trying to make sure that they can get Carter some more one-on-one looks. And I think you've seen him start to get home on some of those, even though you look at the box score for him last week, it only says 2 tackles and 1 sack. And you're thinking to yourself, wow, Carter stinks. That's what we're trying to tell you with this podcast. He also had a season-high 7 pressures. He couldn't be blocked. Now, he didn't get home on as many as maybe he probably should have, but they're trying to make sure up front that Winston is essentially his sole purpose is either to try and get around the tackle and seal the backside, or he's playing the run. They know that Winston doesn't have the, you know, the best athletic traits of a Big Ten defensive lineman, but what he can do is he can have a good run fit and he can get upfield to try and close the pocket around the quarterback, which can allow the 3 technique to either get him from the inside or Carter can spin back and get him from the outside. So I hope that makes sense, Luke.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. I guess we'll run to our next question. This is from Bill from insurance_Burns. I think this one's for you, Ryan. He's like, can you just read my ad, please?
That's a pretty good lead in. I like that one, Luke. I really do. So, yeah, we got an ad here from the Burns Insurance Agency owned by my father, Bill Burns. He's keeping the same script as last week as the Gopher coaches are out on the recruiting trail this week. And just as they're out recruiting 3 and 4 star recruits, and my dad is recruiting new business and new business and personal accounts to move over to the Burns Insurance Agency. And as an independent insurance agent, my dad has access to over 20 of the finest insurance companies to choose from. So if you're looking for an agent who ranks you as a 5-star recruit and will do everything he can do to protect you and your business or your home or your auto, just like the Gopher offensive line has been protecting their quarterback, contact him at insurancebyburns.com, Luke. But yeah, we should probably get some more of these in. Let's see. This is from ATL57, I think that's LB. What is the message on the recruiting trail for Fleck and company since they have gone to 8-0 this season? Like I said, they're trying to get back into some names that may have potentially gave them a look in the spring or the summer. And they were like, well, yeah, you're Minnesota. Like we're not from the area. You know, we may have come and visit, but also, it's like you're Minnesota. Well, hey, yeah, knock, knock. We're 8-0 now. Do you want to listen? Because you're still a really good player and our feelings aren't hurt. So, again, that's kind of the message with them in the 2020 class. They're still really happy with a lot of the commits that they already have. But that's where, again, I think you're going to see that in the 2021 class, where if Minnesota can finish in the regular season here with 9, 10, I mean, maybe even 11 wins, you're going to see them, I think, really try to get into some pretty high-profile doors in 2021. Let's see here. What else do we got?
I really like this question, and I have no idea about this, but Norse Gopher asks, are there any stadium improvements plans in the works? Not asking about adding seats, more like adding escalators, open space, party decks, etc. First of all, I'm all for adding escalators, but like, where are we going to put party decks? I want to know where that is. That's where I want.
I think you first have to. I don't want to get into a ticket sales discussion. It's not my forte, but I'm assuming that they're going to have to see a lot more butts in the seats to get that bottom line even more in the black before they think about potentially adding on to the stadium with a party deck. I haven't heard anything of late in terms of improvements there, but we'll see. Forever 39 wants to know, after special teams, what should the team focus on most during the bye week?
After special teams, I think the focus should be on special teams.
No shit.
Now I have to make this explicit. Come on, man.
Oh, I'm just kidding. Luke, you're gonna have to bleep that one out. Sorry. I don't want the explicit tag.
Hold on. Just back to the question about the stadium updates. The guy that I started following today, T Wagner 55, he and MV were going back and forth a little bit about how many tickets are available for the Penn State game. And they're actually literally parsing JSON from the website, from gophersports.com. And it looks like they have something like 7,700 seats still available for that game. Does that surprise anybody?
I'm not going to get into that one.
Dude, that seriously surprised me. But then again, like when we talked to Eric Vigo, like this is a situation where it's a market. They're going to wait till the last minute.
Yeah, again, especially if they do get College Game Day, which I know I have a ton of questions about College Game Day, folks, I would be flabbergasted if they don't go to Tuscaloosa, but I think there's like a 10-15% chance. Now, before you ask, when are we going to know? You're going to know, like, I think Saturday or Sunday. I believe you should know sometime around then. So maybe by the time you listen to this, we know. But back to the what should the team improve on besides special teams, because into the last bye week, it was about the offensive line. And now Forever 39 is like, well, I wouldn't mind if the offensive line brought it to another level. Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure no one would be complaining if the offensive line turned into the 2016 Dallas Cowboys. But I'd say if you could pick one thing on the offensive side of the ball, it would be to make sure that the offensive line can continue to get push. And I want to really make sure that the offensive tackles are ready for what November brings, because you're going to see the best pass rushers that they have seen all season. What Penn State has on the edge, what Iowa has on the edge. You have the first 2 weeks, Sam Schluter and Daniel Faalele are going to be going against 2020 first round draft picks. In A.J. Epenza and Yetur Gross-Mator from Penn State. Both are big, both are freaky athletic, and they are very much disruptive. So if there is one thing on the offensive side of the ball, I really hope that they're going against Boye Mafe and Carter Coughlin. I know it sucks to go against, but you're going to be going against some freaky things there. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I would be repping the absolute crap out of Sorry Marin and Oliver, try and get them ready for what KJ Hamler and I'm going to butcher the tight end's name. I think it's Pat Freiermuth.
I call him number 87.
Yeah. The tight end for Penn State is the best tight end Minnesota's seen all year. I think he's the best tight end in the Big Ten this year. And for my money, KJ Hamler is the best receiver that the Gophers have gone against. Say what you will about Rondale Moore, I think that KJ Hamler is absolutely on his level. I think he's proven that here in Big Ten play. And I think everybody here knows that Penn State is going to throw the ball to KJ Hamler, yet he continues to get open week after week after week. So I want to make sure that those linebackers are ready and that those offensive tackles specifically are ready, because it is going to be as tough as it gets in those first couple of weeks.
Hey, Derek, Rocket Rob asked about the Gophers going up against Penn State's front seven. And this is maybe more, I'm going to make this a little bit more generic, but when you talk about really athletic and big physical mismatches for an offensive line against a front seven, what are some schematic things you can do to attack them?
Well, I think that looking at the Penn State game and just the you know, four games coming up in general, anticipating better defenses, better athleticism. It's something that Ryan was just talking about. They have to prepare for emphasizing different phases, because I think if we just broke the Gophers' offensive phases down into like outside zone, inside zone, and then RPO passing, those are kind of been the three areas that have been clicking for them. And as PJ Flex talked about, they've really been taking what, you know, the defense gives them, as much of a cliche as that is. That's really what's happened. And so what we've seen so far is we've seen in the last few games, more often than not, defenses have been scheming to take away the middle of the field, RPO, mid-range passing. And so doing that, they've been putting an extra safety in the middle of the field, going light in the box, and that's why the Gophers have been running the ball. You know, with the grain of salt that I haven't done scouting on the Gophers defense, I can't speak, you know, intelligently really about exactly what type of schemes these upcoming defenses run. If I had to guess, my bet would be that these upcoming defenses, starting with Penn State, are probably going to try and take away the Gophers outside zone and run in the run game. Reason for that, I think, is if they have more athleticism and speed in their front seven, they want to try and be able to contain and keep up with the Gophers' outside zone, because that's going to stretch. If they give that up, that's going to stretch their defense. So I think if I had to guess, they're probably going to start by trying to take that away. So what the Gophers are going to have to, if that's the case, what the Gophers are going to have to do to counter is they're going to end up either and or running inside zone right at the defense, which is what they did in the Wisconsin game last year. That's what Wisconsin gave them, and they were successful. Or, and probably more likely, it's going to put more pressure on the passing game, and specifically Tanner Morgan, to throw those RPO passes into tighter windows. I just think that the secondaries they're going to see are going to be better. They're going to be more athletic. They're going to be better able to handle the Gophers receivers. I'm not saying that they'll be able to, you know, match up with the Gophers one-on-one, man-for-man, you know, across all three or four wide receiver sets. But I do think that they're going to force Tanner Morgan to throw into tighter window in the RPO game. So that's what I would anticipate starting with Penn State and looking at some of those tougher defenses is, how do the Gophers respond if you know, one of these better defenses are able to take away one of those three phases? They've got to be able to click in the others to balance things out.
All right, I'm going to hit on a couple more here from Gopher Illustrated. 67 Gopher says, how much different do you think the 2020 class that signs in mid-December will be from the current present-day list of commits? That is so tough for me to answer, because I know it's a joke, I get it's a bit, but the reality is things are fluid. There's a lot changing, and there's a lot that will change between the first week of November and the second week of December. We'll see who comes on official visits then. I mean, say Minnesota, best case scenario here, plays for the Big Ten Championship against Ohio State. Well, that's great, but it also means that they have one single weekend to recruit and bring in guys for official visits. And that's the final weekend before signing day, that second weekend of December. So it could be awfully, awfully crazy time in terms of how does Minnesota want to allocate their final couple of spots. I do think that ultimately there'll be some guys that leave this class. There'll be some guys that enter. But in terms of names, boy, oh boy, it is far too far out for me at this point to even start to speculate on that. Hamlin 12, is there a point after the season where a large portion of high school players get their ratings evaluated? I mean, there is, for the most part, once these senior kids finish their seasons and get their highlight tapes out, then I'll start to push it to the evaluators above me with my thoughts. I'll ask for their thoughts. We'll kind of come to a conclusion and reevaluate from there. In terms of guys looking at major changes, I think it's too soon to really know. I would be surprised if a guy like Tank Brown from St. Louis doesn't get a bump to potentially four-star status. Goffmeister, how annoyed is Jeff Brom that archenemy PJ Fleck is 8-0? Absolutely furious. And if you thought that handshake was cold after that Minnesota game earlier in September, you should see him right now, especially with the way their season's going. Just want to do a couple more here. TK Goffman, outside of the six starters on the offensive line, who behind them has impressed and who would be ready upon to step up? I think that your swing tackle outside of the six linemen there, so say two starters go down, would be Jason Dixon. On the interior, I'd be surprised if it wasn't Nate Umlor. I would be pretty surprised if that was the case, so that would be kind of your eight there. I know that the staff thinks that they hit on J.J. Gaudet and Tyler Cooper, the 2019 guys there. But Luke, why don't you get one into Derek here?
All right, so Derek, this one's from Gopher Illustrated before I go to the other one I had queued up. I just find it funny. So B. Wilder 2, which is the worst dumpster fire of the season? Northwestern, Rutgers, or the Cleveland Browns?
I like how no one's talking about Northwestern's absolute dismal season, considering isn't Pat Fitzgerald in like year 10 there?
Also, they won the Big Ten West last year.
And now they're dreadful. Like, literally, their offense.
They brought in that five-star quarterback, too.
And, yeah. Derek, what do you think?
You know, Northwestern, just to add on that, their defense has actually been very stout, and their strength of schedule has actually been pretty high. So it'll be interesting to see how they finish the year. What's just destroyed them is their offense. I mean, you hit on it, Luke. They had high hopes bringing some of these guys in, and that's if they'd been able to have a pulse on offense, they would have, you know, they'd definitely have at least two or three more wins. But I don't know if this is what the person was asking, but that's probably been the biggest surprise. We can't at this point pretend to be surprised that the Cleveland Browns didn't get things figured out this season. That would be
much to the chagrin of Ryan James, by the way, who is a huge Cleveland Browns rube.
And your buddy got picked up again, Ryan. So, and he no longer plays for the Cleveland Browns.
I got no rooting interest there anymore.
I know. Okay, so real quick, I just want to get in another spot for the Goal Line Club. Real quick, for those that are looking to get into the tailgate, they're going to hit fire code, guys, so you need to sign up now, probably this weekend, probably before next weekend, so that you can make your plans. You know, even if game day comes, and I think that's a pretty slim chance, it's going to be a pretty elite event. And as you guys know, I don't use the word elite very, very lightly. But just did you see that text, Ryan, that we got with the specialty drink menu? I like some of these names, so I'm just going to run through them.
For the drink menu for the tailgate?
Yeah, for the tailgate.
Oh, yeah.
Third in Long Island. Rum running back. maroon and gold sunshine.
Oh my gosh. These are so dad jokey, it hurts.
Gopher mimosa. Hail Bloody Mary. And then they get kind of lame, like hot spiked spice cider and Irish coffee. But you know, all that to say, I liked the dad joke nature of these. But really, truly, the Goal Line Club tailgate events are elite. It's going to be chilly, guys. They're indoor bathrooms. If you're bringing your significant other, it's a pretty easy sell to be inside. Good food, good drinks, etc. It's a pretty good bargain. So make sure that you guys sign up. Use the code Bell5 and Axe5 for the Penn State and Wisconsin games respectively, and you can sign up at goallineclub.org. Okay, so real quick, Derek, I wanted to get to, I think this question is actually really good, especially for people that are either watching the game live there or also on TV, since fans can never really know what blocking/defensive assignments are being called, what are some good tricks to observing O-line and D-line performance when we look pre-snap setup and then the ensuing action? This comes from Step Yuma.
Well, it's a good question. Part of it is kind of funny. If it's some of the things the offense does is to keep you out of knowing what plays they're going to be running. So it's difficult, you know, if it's difficult to figure out what they're going to run and how things are going to look, then they're, in a sense, they're doing their job. But a couple tips you can look out of at least the offense that the Gophers run, usually, and if this is not a rule, but it's a, you know, you can go with the odds. If the running back is lined up to the left of the quarterback, usually the running play is going to go to the right, because the handoff, is, whether it's outside zone or even if it's inside zone read option, the quarterback is usually handing off, and the action and the strong side, the play side, will be to the right, and then vice versa. So that's your first tip if you look at where the running back's lined up. Now, again, real quick, they have broke that tendency, and they do that on purpose so that you're not able to always key on that, but I would say it's definitely over 50, probably over 70% of the time that tendency carries out. So beyond that, if you're going to guess where they're running, so again, if he's lined up to the left of the quarterback and you're assuming outside zone to the right or inside zone to the right, this is a zone scheme. Every player is on the offensive line. His assignment is to block the play side gap. So if it's a run to the right, they're all stepping to the right and blocking the gap to the right. So if you look at the defensive formation and look who's defending that gap, that's more than likely who that player is going to block. So if you have a nose guard that's shaded to the right of the center and it's going to be a play to the right, that's who the center is more than likely going to end up blocking. And these are all, you know, with the caveat that defenses can stunt and they can blitz, but if they're playing head-up base, that's what's going to happen. So if you've then identified who's defending the gap, it will give you an idea of who makes the tackle. You'll be able to know based on whose guy that was to block or whose gap that was to defend. And you can determine, you know, who quote unquote won the battle up front. So to carry out that example, if the nose tackle ends up making the play and he's shaded to the strong side, the play ends up running to the right. He's won that battle against the center because the center's blocking that gap, he's defending that gap, he ends up making the tackle, that's who won on the play. So just a couple things to look for in tendencies in trying to evaluate the offensive and defensive line play. It just comes down to a battle over each gap. And so if you look at the formations by how they line up pre-snap, that'll give you a little hint.
All right, I'm going to take a couple more here from GI, including, I guess we'll start with this one. So if game day comes here, whether it's for Penn State or whether it's Wisconsin, who do we think is the celebrity picker from the state of Minnesota?
Oh, man. Can we all answer this one?
Yeah.
Because I got multiple names that I want to throw out.
Let's do it. You lead us off.
Oh, I lead us off. So
Go for it.
I think a lot of people have thrown out Brock Lesnar. I think that's, I don't know, probably not the take that I would go with. I think Dark Horse guy might be Andrew Zimmern, the food critic, etc. Because they often have interesting people there. And then I've also been openly campaigning for Ryan Burns from GopherIllustrated.com. Okay, my bad.
Oh, you're the worst. You're the absolute worst.
I'll see if I can think of a few more here while we're going. You got any ideas, Ryan?
So I've also seen Tony Dungy as a name. I think that'd be interesting. I literally just Googled famous people from Minnesota. Now, maybe it's the, and I've lived here 27 years, but I said, did you know that Jessica Biel is from Minnesota? It's supposedly Vince Vaughn too.
No, didn't know that.
Like, I had no idea that those two people were.
I guess maybe we should try and think of alumni too. Derek,
how about Lindsey Vaughn? You got an Olympian that could potentially go up there.
That's true.
Maybe Jesse the Body.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of actual alumni, because do they often try to get alumni, or is it just fans? I don't watch game day a ton.
I think it's more or less just kind of iconic names that folks would resonate with.
So Pete Najarian, trading insider, right?
He could, sure.
Sure, he's on television quite a bit. Derek, you got any names that come to mind at the top of the head?
Yeah, I mean, the first that jumped to mind would be Tony Dungy, but it would be interesting. I mean, he's under contract with NBC, and I don't know.
True.
That's a good point.
To see if he may or may not be allowed to, you know, be featured on an ABC, ESPN ABC program. I don't know if this, I'm not saying this is the right thing to do, but I would be interested to see if they went with a being that, as Luke mentioned, one of the differentiators of Minnesota is the pro sports in the town. If they went with a pro athlete, even a current pro athlete from Minnesota, people may not love that because
Adam Thielen potentially, even though he's
Adam Thielen would be good. There's a Minnesota. You've got the college.
You got the Minnesota, well. Minnesota. But even though he's not a Gopher,
right. I could see people maybe. Some backlash on that because if you have Stephon Diggs or something, they would say, well, what if he wasn't born in Minnesota? Yeah. There could be some backlash there, but it would be interesting that, you know, that's the only other thing I can think of. It's just the pro athlete angle, that there's an abundance here. And obviously those are all known, big names.
I got one here from Dane Mosher 7 who wants to know, what did I see myself doing career-wise in college or my first year out?
Can I just rehash all of the different occupations I believe that you were going to take at one point?
I mean,
I think at one point you were going to be an actuary.
Yep, I'm through Calc 4 because I thought I was going to be an actuary when I first got into college.
Can you do those triple integrals just in your head?
I have a lot of useless math stuff I can do now that I run Gopher Illustrated. I don't get to do math a lot, so I like to kind of challenge my brain from time to time. First off, I thought I was going to be a meteorologist.
Oh, yeah. Which
I still love the weather. Turns out the only college in the state of Minnesota that offers meteorology as a degree is St. Cloud State. Nearly went there to play football, but I didn't want to be 295 pounds playing tackle. So I turned that down. And then I went to St. Olaf, got into actuarial science, that is, and then transferred to the U. It just didn't work out. My life in a cubicle with my personality, I just didn't see it going that way. And, it's been a weird path to get here. But from actuarial science to GI has been pretty crazy. But I also want to throw this question to you guys from Butch Nash Guy, who wants to know, who do you think has been the biggest surprise on both sides of the ball this year? I will kick that one to Derek first.
Well, on offense, probably Sam Schluter. He's been, as we talked about it, so I won't probably spend as much time, but he was a guy that was much maligned last year, struggled quite a bit, and he's probably been, we talked about, the most consistent lineman this year on offense. He's kind of been the rock for that group. Defensively, probably Ben St. Juiced, a guy that maybe you had high hopes for, Ryan, because you're a little more tied into the recruiting side than I am, and maybe could foresee that, but certainly not a guy that, not only is he playing a lot, but I've touched on it a couple times in previous podcasts. They're playing a lot of island man coverage on the outside, which is very difficult. And that's really the highest requirement you can have on those outside corners. Now, Coney Durr has been good at that, and he's always been a good press man cover corner. But the fact that now they have been on the other side to be able to run that is freed things up on defense. So I think he's been the biggest surprise on defense for me.
Luke, what do you think?
So defense, to me, Jordan Howden, it was probably the biggest surprise. I think he's taken arguably the largest jump. He struggled mightily at times last season, and part of it was because they had nobody else to play probably at that position, or he was just barely better. I don't even know, but his tackling in space has been much improved, from, in my opinion. So I'd take Jordan Howden on defense. On offense, it's a little harder. I think I'll kind of take a pass on this one, except, but I will say that I think the tight end group has been better than I thought. I know they haven't maybe flashed in the pass game as much as people would have liked to see, but they have blocked so incredibly well. Co-Keefe, Jake Paulson. I think we expected to see more Brevin Spanford early, and now we're starting to see him. I think he'll play a larger role down the stretch. I think that just that entire tight end group has been much better than I anticipated going into the season.
I I'd stick with Jordan Howden on defense. I mean, this guy was a legitimate burn victim on a week-by-week basis, whether it was trying to get him to tackle an open space last year, get into coverage. It was bad. It was really bad. And now he has been good. And I say good, and I don't mean average. I mean, he's been good in the box, making tackles. He's got four passes broken up. I mean, he may have a broken coverage here or there, but he has improved so, so much, and that surprised the heck out of me. And I think offensively, it's Tanner Morgan. I didn't see this coming. Now, I saw him make some throws down the stretch, but you also got, you know, Minnesota leaned on their running game so tremendously hard last year down the stretch. And I came into the season, once Anixed went down, thinking, well, this is going to ride or die with Tanner Morgan. And you've seen them ride and ride really high because Morgan has been so good. And I wasn't expecting that. And I know that Beer Chief also wants to know, do I support Tanner Morgan as the QB1 going forward? Or is there going to be another Anixed discussion in the spring? I don't know how in the world I could say with a straight face, with any conviction in my voice, that Tanner Morgan is QB1 until he gets hurt. Like, there is no more competition. The way that this guy's been playing in this offense, he's been awesome. And I think you have to kind of support him as the QB1 for years to come. Gentlemen, do you think that's a terrible take, or what do you think?
It's hard to argue with the results.
Yeah, and again, this isn't a results-based podcast, but
yeah, like, I mean,
Tanner has improved, and he's improving from week to week and month to month, and I think that he doesn't have the physical attributes that Zach has.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, you don't have to. I mean, you just have to be able to run the offense efficiently, and from what we've seen from Tanner Morgan, he's been able to do that consistently throughout his starting time.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think he's earned the right. I think he'll go into spring practice without question being QB1. But like we saw with Anixed, and I know this is a little bit of a cop-out, you know, it's very rare, at least in the history of Gopher football, that a quarterback doesn't get hurt. So I don't think that the days of Zach Anixed are done by any stretch of the imagination. So I think that you will see him play at some point. But I think, yeah, this is Morgan's team. I don't know. I'll throw it to Derek.
Yeah, I think so. It's very, like, I'll just echo what you guys have said. It's very difficult at this point to find fault with anything he's done. I think one difference this year is, just going back to the beginning, is in those very difficult situations, his play got even better. So I think that I'll say this: in the last four games, they're going to see three and potentially four incredibly good defenses. And if Tanner continues to play well against those teams and in tough situations like he did against Fresno State, coming back, against Georgia Southern with, you know, kind of the script turned upside down on him, if he's able to continue to play well in those situations in these last four games, I don't think there's any question.
Okay, I want to add one comment, and then you can ask Derek if a follow-up question there. I think we all say that, but I still think he has room to improve, right? His pocket awareness, whatever, I don't think that he is, I still don't think he's probably even a pro prospect, but like, he definitely has room to improve, and I expect him to improve, you know, going into next season as well.
Absolutely. I don't really have any disagreements there. I'm trying to find the person who asked it, but Derek, I know there are folks that want to hear your recruiting story. Clem's tutor, well, that's incredibly ironic, wants to know.
That's amazing screen name.
Derek, what was your recruiting story, and how did you end up at the University of Minnesota?
I grew up in Minnesota. I grew up a Gopher fan. I was maybe the better thing I can speak to is just how much recruiting has changed. When I was being recruited, I was recruited by, back then there were 11 schools in the Big Ten, and I think I was recruited by 9 of them. But the offensive line was not a nationally recruited position by any means. So, and in fact, very few positions were. And so the name of the game back then was, it was usually within conference, within the Midwest. if I'm being honest, I really hated recruiting. I was a, I'm sitting on a podcast right now, but I was and kind of am an introvert. And so I didn't really like the phone calls and just the whole process. You know, I kind of just wanted to do my thing, just didn't really have the personality for it. And I think that really didn't help me, to be honest. You know, I still enjoyed playing. And you know, I, you know, probably could have handled things better, but, that being said, was fortunate enough to be recruited by, a lot of good schools. But for me, you know, and this is kind of my, you know, plug, I'm now a Gopher fan, but, what I think was best for me was the chance to go to Minnesota and be a part of a different situation when you play for your home team school. And also being a part of, my first year was Glenn Mason's first year. And so being a part of building, and, you know, in many ways at that time, turning around the program was another unique situation. I look at, and I don't find fault. Everybody's different and I respect everybody's decision, you know, whatever's right for them. But to me, it's a very different thing to go to a school that's wins a national championship once every 3 years. And then you go in and win a national championship, and that experience, you know, I'm sure is incredible, but it's not the same as going into and helping a school turn it around or come on the up on the rise, be a part of a local school, be here where your, you know, where your family is, and so on and so forth. So that was the right decision for me. I have no regrets, had a fantastic experience, and it's really interesting to see how it's changed, though, how these guys offer list now, just, you know, I don't follow it that closely. So I have to be honest, I don't follow recruiting, but I do, you know, just at the very surface level, I look at some of these offer lists and, you know, when guys talk about, I'm narrowing it down to my top 12 schools. I mean, I'm just like, does that even mean anything? You know, 12 schools. It's like, I can't believe, you know, I mean, were they,
right, I like these takes. I like them a lot.
Right.
Trust me.
Okay, well, that's, you know, I'm not close to it anymore, but, or I don't follow it that close, but that just really, that's otherworldly to me, because in my situation, I never even declared a final. I mean, there were schools that I was, you know, choosing between. There were schools that were, you know, I had a closer relationship and, you know, within the Big Ten and one of them outside the Big Ten, but I didn't. It was a different world. It was just a different time, and look for what there is now. And it seems like, you know, three lifetimes ago.
So I'm going to insert a question to kind of piggyback on this, both of you guys, really, you know, in basketball, I like basketball a ton. Ryan James and I do a podcast called Talk Gopher Buckets. We talk a lot of recruiting. I actually don't follow it super close. But you know, they're getting criticized, and also PJ is getting criticized for not getting high end talent, here in the state of Minnesota. So Derek, I'll throw this at you first. I have often hypothesized that there is a lot of added pressure to actually stay home, for these athletes. And, you know, in some ways I wonder if one of the ways to avoid it is going out of state. Now it could be that a fit is there, but if that's in the back of some of their minds, do you think that there's added pressure as a guy who stayed home, you know, for those kids that do stay home and play for their home state or their home school?
Yeah, I think so. I think the way that I look at that, and maybe we're saying the same thing, but I played with a guy who he ended up playing what then was Division II. It's now FCS, and he wanted to get out. I mean, he could have played for FCS teams within Minnesota, but I don't know that it was so much avoiding the pressure as just that was his personality. He wanted to just get away. And again, that's his personality. That's what fit him. And so I think that's a valid take. People that want to get away and have a different experience. I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but I'll also say something else going on, I think, in Minnesota that's a little different is there's a little bit of a culture here where we're very highly educated. It tends to be a very white collar culture where it's very encouraged when people leave and go to school. I mean, I had classmates that didn't play sports that went to, you know, you name it. I mean, Arizona and went to Colorado and just went all over the place. And it was really encouraged, and, you know, and that's okay. But I can tell you that, and Ryan could probably, you know, well, Ryan, maybe you agree or disagree. There are cultures in other states where it is, you're born and raised to love the hometown team. And that's the team. And if you've ever had a chance to go to that school, that's the school you're going to. That's just, that's the culture in some states. That's how it is. And that's not what we have here. So I think that it's a little different in Minnesota. And I think that that carries through to, that's also a factor of some of these guys leaving.
I think just recruiting in 2019 is so much different than when I got recruited in 2011, and even going back to when Derek got recruited earlier in the 2000s, it's just, there's so many more different people in your ear, and there's so much more influence that I think social media can bring to get in your ear, that everybody in your entire circle, whether that's friends, family, whoever it may be, just gets in your ear. And to Derek's point, kids who grow up in the state of Wisconsin or the state of Iowa, you know, for the most part, they grew up and it was like, hey, if you're good enough, yeah, you're going to the in-state school. You're going to Iowa or you're going to Madison. And with Minnesota now, I think some of it is because of the whole pro sports scene and how there's so much more going on and compared to what's going on in Wisconsin and Iowa. And trust me, not me taking a shot at just the small town people, as everyone here knows, I'm the outdoorsman of this podcast. It's just like everyone has a different reason for leaving. No, and there's still some bitter people. Even thinking back to last class, when Minnesota was playing a game earlier this year against one of their Big Ten opponents, someone's father of a kid who went there was texting me during the game, just crap talk in Minnesota. I'm thinking to myself, you know that Minnesota's up like 30 something points and your son's probably going to play in this game because they're losing so bad, right? Like, it just seems like the popular thing to do is to down talk or just talk poorly about the University of Minnesota because they've been so mediocre for so long. And I think that a winning culture, because even when I was growing up, I mean, I grew up in an era where it was Maroney and Barber, and Derek is playing on those teams and in the early 2000s there. And Minnesota, from what I remember about that, I mean, they were, that was the team to watch. And for these kids growing up, they grew up in the Brewster years. They grew up in the Kill years, the early Kill years, where it was bad. And it was really bad. And because of that, and because of the media in this town, and how everybody likes to be so satirical and just talk so poorly about Minnesota, yet other teams in this market get passes no matter what they do. And the kids hear that. You turn it on 100.3 or you turn it on something else. I mean, that's just kind of the way it was. And I think if Fleck's able to win here and win consistently over the next few years, I think that starts to change. But it's just, I think it's a product of their environment, from their family and friends. And I also don't think that the media has necessarily helped Minnesota's cause here to try and keep some of their in-state recruits home too.
And I'll probably add, you know, the nature of media, but also social media, right? Like, I know you touched on that a little bit, Ryan, but I don't know if social media has helped that at all. And maybe even the polarization of the political climate, right? It's hard for people to, not have really, really far one direction or the other direction opinions on something. And people rarely admit when they're wrong in this day and age, which is too bad. Because you know what? I was wrong about Joe Rossi. And you know what? Ryan was wrong about Hank Ekpe. And we can both admit
that. Why you always got to bring up Hank Ekpe? Why you always got to, like, we could talk like Leidner takes from 2016 or... I'm sure I've had some other, I know folks. I haven't heard the Mo Ibrahim. I haven't heard the Mo Ibrahim talk for a long time, but I'll say this: for as surprised as I am that Mo Ibrahim is a really good running back, there are so many more people on the Gopher coaching staff that are like, holy cow, this guy is so much more than what we saw in practice that it's insane. So I guess I'm a product of my sources for some of it, but also, you know, I was wrong, and it be like that sometimes. And as the the millennials would come back and tell me, it really do.
I just love how triggered you get the hey Gakpe thing. I'm sorry, it's me.
I don't know. It just be like that though. You guys got any more that you kind of want to touch on here before we end? I know that we got a lot of Penn State specific questions, and we got a whole. The next podcast is going to be solely dedicated to Penn State. I know a lot of you are itching for Penn State talk.
The next two podcasts.
Yeah, the next two podcasts are all about Penn State. So, I mean, you're going to have to stop KJ Hamler on offense. Pat Freiermuth, I believe, is the tight end's name. You're going to have to stop him. I'll also say that from the little research I've done on Penn State so far, they're Maryland-esque in the fact that a lot of their scoring drives are not unsustained drives in terms of, I've only kind of just gleaned here at Big Ten play, but in their five Big Ten games, I mean, most of their, I think like 70, 75% of their drives are like seven plays or less scoring wise. So I have to think that the MO is going to be the same one it's been all year, folks. Make the opposing offense sustain drives to get points. Maryland was incapable of doing that. So have many other teams Minnesota's played. But then defensively, how does Minnesota hold up against what I think is the best defensive line they've faced so far in terms of athleticism, in terms of physical gifts, whatever it may be? They also have a really good linebacking core as well. So how does Minnesota's Minnesota moving company up front between the tight ends and the offensive line hold up? Because this is the most that they're going to see in terms of test-wise all single season.
All right, Derek, just real quick. I know you're not going to be able to join us for the Penn State breakdown, so anything you'd like to add about the upcoming Penn State game, whether it's schematically or just like, you know, looking forward to playing in a big game, et cetera, you'd like to add before we close out?
I think the only thing I'll add, just trying to draw from my own experience, is when you take that step up to the next level of competition and what we feel is going to be the best, probably the best, athletically the best offense and probably the best defense that the Gophers have faced, is I would anticipate what I call a recalibration. When you're a player and you take the next step, whether it's going from non-conference to conference, or in this case, going from playing teams that haven't been ranked, so now you're going to play a top 10 team, there's an adjustment that happens. The players are faster, they're stronger. And so usually what that means is those 8-yard gains or 4-yard gains and so on and so forth. So, but really the answer, how they adjust to it and the time that takes really will define how they respond to that. Sometimes you'll see a team that goes through a recalibration in a game like this and they're able to get their footing and recalibrate to that and adjust to that level of competition within a quarter or two. Other times they aren't able to do it. So within a game. So they may, you know, you see teams take a step back in the game. I think this year, from all the games we've broken down, I think the Gophers can play at the level of the last four teams. It's just how quickly they can step up to that. I think that's going to have a big factor in the game.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining, Derek. We'll obviously miss you on the breakdown. But coming up, we will have a preview, which we believe will come out either Tuesday or Wednesday. Kind of depends on some logistical things. I'll be traveling for work, etc. So it makes it a little bit more challenging. But that said, we do want to thank you all for listening. Per usual, we'd appreciate if you'd rate and review the podcast. It's a good way for people to, you know, further find us. And also, if you just want to share to a friend or a colleague that maybe doesn't know about the podcast, or, you know, maybe is just getting into Gopher football as they're jumping on the bandwagon, please let them know. We do really want to thank you, though. The numbers are absolutely absurd in terms of people that have joined us. We're up another, I think, 28% over what was our previously largest download month. So thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun, and go Gophers.